Good evening, Mayor Fast, council members, planning commissioners. Or we will call you the 2030 General Plan Update Committee. Thank you for being here tonight. We've handed out in front of you a few pieces of material. You have an agenda. You have a draft general plan, several chapters in front of you, a couple of other exhibits, and then also a tentative schedule for the remainder of the project. To start with, I wanted to introduce staff that's been working on the general plan update project. It's myself, David Burleigh, city planner, Rob Terry, assistant planner, Darlene Mata, planning consultant with DR Mata Consulting, and Bruce O'Neill, land use associates. City manager is here, Rocky Rogers, Norman Martinez, city engineer, Lori Oaken, finance director. Joel Blake was around earlier, and Kate Pierce, the city clerk. First, what I'm going to do is go over a quick review of the project up to this point. Then I'm going to hand things off to Darlene to talk about some of the introduction and the draft land use document that's been handed out to you tonight. And then Bruce O'Neill is going to talk about some of the overall growth policies that are contained in that document. Go back to Darlene talking about some of the development-related policies in the document. And then we've allowed some time for questions and comments from the committee and questions and comments from the audience. And then we'll wrap up. We anticipate being here for about an hour and a half, 2 hours, depending how quickly we can move. And then we've got our next workshop scheduled for Monday, February 28th. We will get back to you on whether or not we'll hold that meeting here or possibly at the council chambers. A brief review of what brought us to this point. We really started the project going in 2007, 2008. And we relied on city staff to prepare the project, both staff and then bringing in planning consultants with specific expertise in other areas. And working with the current general plan, which was adopted in 1993, we looked at the direction that it sets is still the direction that we think the community intends to grow. Along with the general plan, the 1993 general plan update, we have several other long-range planning documents that are the Ridley specific plan, the rail corridor master plan, the Southeast Ridley industrial specific plan, and the Kings River corridor specific plan. So our goal was not to rewrite the general plan of the general plan, but to revisit what works, update what needs to be updated, and consolidate all those plans. For different areas, you need to look in different documents, and what we want to do is get all those in the same place at the same time. So again, it's been to rewrite this document, but keep the direction that we believe the community wants to go. So we started with a series of workshops in March 2008 that went through December. And through those workshops, we confirmed that yes, this is the direction that the community wants to go. Those series of plans that have been visited at different points in time collectively set what we want to do for the community into the future. And through those series of workshops with this committee and the community, we got to the proposed land use map that's in your document. It's on this table here for the audience to look at, and it's also on the screen. And that map has a proposed boundary change. The process was, how much do we anticipate growing? How much land do we have available today? How much do we need to accommodate growth in the future? And where do we want to do this, and how do we want to do it? And through that workshop came up with this proposed land use map. It's not just the map that's the general plan update. It's also the policy that corresponds with the map. Bruce O'Neill is going to come up in a few minutes and talk about policies related to the growth that you see occurring on that map. So the two things go together. It's not simply update a map, expand the boundary, but it's also look at the policies you have in the document and how do they work with what we want to do in the future. Along with the proposed land use map, we put together, we looked at all the different land use designations, and we've come up with this land use designation matrix that talks about the different types of land uses that you see on that map and what would occur in those areas. This evening, Darlene Mata is going to talk about those different land use designations, what they are intended to do, what we may need to change, what we may need to add, and talk about policies related to development that are contained in the draft land use element that we're reviewing tonight. Boy, I told you not to turn the heater back. In addition to the work we've been doing with the land use map, the zoning matrix, and other data gathering, we've been working with EMC Consulting, who's preparing an environmental impact report that analyzes the potential impact of the plan that we're developing. Part of what they need to analyze is some work that we're having done with HDR Engineering regarding utility master planning. What do you have to develop? What kind of infrastructure do you need to serve the projected growth, and what are the impacts of putting that infrastructure in? All of this work starting to come together now, and we've provided you with a tentative schedule in front of you that has a series of workshops to go over the draft material. We anticipate another 3 workshops to get through all of that material with you. If need be, we could have more, but we feel pretty confident we could probably make it in 3. We would anticipate getting to the Planning Commission hearings in July, City Council hearings in August, and then submitting a LAFCO application and LAFCO hearing in October. That's what I wanted to go over with you tonight. I'm going to hand everything over to Darlene now, unless you have some questions about any of what I just briefly covered. Thank you, Darlene. And Darlene hurt her back, so she's not going to move too fast. Probably still faster than me.
Thank you, Council and members of the Commission. I'm up here just for a few minutes to kind of go back and remind us what we were doing here. The general plan update, if you'll remember, wasn't intended to rewrite the whole document that you have. We thought we had a good basic document. It was a little difficult to read. The community had spent a significant amount of time on the Reedley specific plan and the rail corridor master plan. So the primary goal was to bring in those specific plans and merge them into the general plan update and develop a set of policies that would last you for the next 20 years. So I just wanted to remind you a little bit that we weren't going to rewrite everything, although it will look very different from your existing document if any of you looked at that in a while. It's very different, but a lot of the policies have stayed the same. A lot of the redundancies have been removed. We've made it easier to read. It makes a little bit more sense, and in the end we will have added a couple of new elements. A economic development element, which I think this council wanted to emphasize that we wanted to encourage economic development, so we'll be seeing that at a later workshop, and a community health element, which the council started back, I think, in 2009 when you adopted the Healthy Communities goals and policies, and we've incorporated some of those into that element. In your document, how do we change this? In the document itself, and it's page 1-1, you have the 8 overall objectives. These are the objectives we used as we wrote all of the policies and the document itself, all of the elements actually, as a basic desire and plan for the community of Reedley. These aren't set in stone. If these need to be tweaked a little bit, or if there's something else that you'd like to see in there as a major goal, we could surely add that. As a matter of fact, sitting down just as you guys were talking, I thought maybe we should have one that says provide a safe and healthy community, and that would lend us into the healthy communities element, and an update. We want to make a major update to your safety element, which we've already started working on to emphasize the gang issue and some other safety issues. So again, just a reminder that we didn't rewrite the whole thing, so you're not going to see a wholesale new document. Some of this will look very familiar. but we did try to make it a little easier. And that's all I had to say until we get into actual policy discussion. We're going to go to Bruce O'Neill now, who's going to talk to you about the policies that actually are in the document to address growth.
Thanks, Darlene. Good evening, how are you? It's been a little while since we all got together, but it's good to be back. Bruce O'Neill, Land Use Associates in Fresno, part of the consulting team on the general plan update. I wanted to go back for just a second to the general plan map, because that is the basis for all the policies which follow. And just some reminders as to where we are with the general plan map. The guiding standard for our general plan and our population projections, if the council and commission recalls, we looked at a 3% average annual growth rate, which took us to a population of 45,000 in the year 2030. So the city will approximately double within that time frame. The outer boundary in the darker colors shows that ultimate growth boundary to accommodate a population of 45,000. The inner boundary, this blue line that's on your map, is our existing sphere of influence. And if you recall, the sphere of influence is set by LAFCO, the Local Agency Formation Commission, and it is the boundary within which we can annex property. So in order to achieve our ultimate growth, we need to expand the sphere of influence to the outer boundary suggested by the map. And as Dave talked about earlier on your schedule, we're looking at going to LAFCO. They're the agency which must approve the sphere in the late summer of this year. It's also important to know that should LAFCO approve that sphere expansion, the city will be looking at revising the MOU with Fresno County to accommodate this larger sphere of influence. So we have a land use pattern which takes us to 2030. The good thing about this map is that it shows a balanced growth. A lot of communities such as Fresno, for example, grows exclusively in one direction. Reedley is proposing to grow in three or four directions, and we would be four for four except for the Tulare County line on the south. So this map shows significant new growth to the north, to the east, and to the west of the Kings River. And this is important to note. The west of the Kings River area is a new growth area for the city of Reedley, with the exception of the minor growth that occurs there now. But it would become a major entryway to the community on Manning Avenue with new commercial development and supportive residential development on the west side of the river. Darlene talked about the overall land use element policies and the guiding principles of the plan are actually taken with some minor amendment from your existing general plan. And we think that they're important enough to carry forward into the general plan update. The first three guiding principles place a great emphasis on the preservation of agricultural land as being the foundation of the community of Reedley and its largest employer. So those guiding principles look at continuing agricultural production balanced by compact residential development and commercial development within the city limits. Principle number four says establish a pattern of urban development which provides for the economically efficient provision of urban services with particular emphasis on sewer and water infrastructure. And if you recall, the city, as part of the general plan update, is updating water, sewer, and storm drain master plans. Those drafts are to be completed shortly and will be incorporated into not only the general plan update, but be given to our environmental consultant as well. The overall growth policies, which are tied to the land use map we just looked at, are clustered under our title of urban growth management. And this is important to consider because it demonstrates to not only the city of Reedley and its residents, but to other organizations like LAFCO and Fresno County, that we are growing in an efficient and logical manner. The goals talk about establishing an urban growth management policies which seek to minimize the premature conversion of productive and potentially productive ag land, minimize urban sprawl and leapfrog development, facilitate orderly transition from rural agricultural uses to urban land uses. So even though we're unavoidably converting agricultural land, we want to do it in the most responsible way possible and to mitigate those impacts as much as we can. The expanded sphere of influence would add about 3,000 acres to the existing sphere of influence. So today we have approximately 4,900 acres in our sphere, and we're proposing a 7,900 acre sphere of influence to the year 2030. The policies seek LAFCO approval of a sphere of influence that reflects the goals and policy of the general plan. And we'll be doing that. In fact, we've asked the LAFCO executive officer to appear before your committee and discuss the requirements of LAFCO as it relates to sphere of influence expansions, and ultimately the annexation program which would follow. Require contiguous development within the sphere of influence unless it can be demonstrated that the development of contiguous property is infeasible. This is an important policy which addresses leapfrog development. We now have a policy which requires contiguous development for annexation purposes, and we want to continue that into the future. Policy 2.5.8 is an important one. Implement an annexation policy based on annexing land for residential development only when at least 80% of the residentially designated land inside the city limits is developed. This policy gets at urban infill and an analysis of the amount of vacant residential land within your existing city limits. And I have to tell you that Greeley has done a very good job over the years of implementing a compact urban form compared to other cities within Fresno County and the Valley. You do have a low percentage of vacant land within your residential zone districts in the city limits. Ag preservation. Encourage the preservation of the maximum feasible amount of existing productive agricultural land. We'll be working with Fresno County to make sure that they maintain agricultural zoning outside our sphere of influence, but also inside our sphere on lands that are not yet annexed to the city. What this generally means is a zone district of AE20 or AL20, which means that the minimum lot size is 20 acres. We want to make sure that the county does not allow small lot parcelization on our urban fringe, which makes urban expansion very difficult. The Land Use Policy 2.5.3 starts to deal with the Williamson Act. The Williamson Act, of course, is a contract between the property owner and the county to maintain land in permanent agricultural production. It's a 10-year contract which automatically renews. So in order to efficiently grow, we need to make sure that those property owners within the Williamson Act are aware of the likelihood of urban development on their property, work with them to file a notice of non-renewal, which means within 10 years their contract would expire and urban development could proceed. We are prohibited from annexing land that's in the Williamson Act, and the only way we can include land in our sphere that's in the Williamson Act is to make certain and specific findings. So the Williamson Act will play a major role both in preserving ag but also in our ability to move ahead without the Williamson Act lands becoming an obstacle. The final policy here says establish an urban reserve designation that will serve as an agriculture, if an area where agriculture continues to be the appropriate land use. So even though we're recognizing that agriculture will eventually be phased out, we would designate certain properties as urban reserve to make sure that agriculture can continue in the interim. The community buffer was identified by your commission and council as an important strategy in providing permanent separation between surrounding communities, primarily that of Parlier and Dinuba to the south. The plan map shows, you can see on your map, a designation that's a light green color that is called the remainder. That is land that would remain unincorporated and zoned large lot agriculture by Fresno County. We have defined a buffer which would deal with that land to the south, adjacent to the Tulare County line, that would separate permanently the city of Greeley from the city of Dinuba. So we have two types of buffers: a large lot county zoned agricultural buffer to the north and west, and a buffer that would eventually be within the city of Greeley that would provide separation on a permanent basis between Reedy and Dinuba. Those are the primary urban growth management strategies. We'll be containing these in our package of application to LAFCO for the sphere expansion and convincing LAFCO that the sphere expansion is justified based on population growth and land demand. I'd be happy to answer any questions before Darlene comes back and talks about development policies.
Just a clarification for me.
Yes.
The boundary to the south with Tulare County?
Yes.
Could you go over the what the plan is to keep that separate from Dinuba? I don't quite understand. Because there's no green space in
right.
that area.
For the most part, development is already at the county line. The urban buffer would occur in this area here, where there would be specific land use policies to provide a continual buffer there. Dinuba has, in their general plan, policies for a buffer on the south side of the county line. So I think it will be necessary and important to continue to work with Dinuba officials to make sure that this stays in a permanent buffer. I think they're as interested in it as Reedley is. So other than this approximately 80-acre area here where buffer policies would be implemented, the balance of the buffer would be through a combination of land use policies along the county line and the Dinuba general plan.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. I had one question on the buffer to the along the river.
Yes.
North of Manning Avenue.
Yes.
And this map really doesn't show it, but I believe there's a buffer on the west side of the river.
Yes.
Going up to the northern boundary, I guess, which would be Adams Avenue on that side.
Yes.
Right, but this is on, there is a, what, 1,500-foot buffer on the west side of the river?
Yeah, that's intended to be this dark green area here, which is open space.
Right.
So in combination, it would be the open space designation in the river bottom and the permanent ag within Fresno County at this location.
Right, but I'm just trying to make sure that that buffer extends to the west side of the river.
Yes, it does.
For a portion.
Yes, it does.
Does this map really doesn't?
No, it doesn't, and that would be reflected in policies as well as specific maps in the general plan.
That big map over there shows it, which might not be a bad idea to hang that up so people can...
Yeah, we look for a place to hang it.
They just painted the
Okay, well.
No, that's a very important policy and comes directly from the Kings River Plan.
A percentage of the 3,000 acres that you want to bring under our
yes.
influence would be under the Williams Act to have it today?
For the most part, the sphere of influence procedure has resulted in a very uniform pattern of Williamson Act contracts. Most of them are outside our current sphere of influence, but inside that proposed boundary. And I would estimate probably 50% of that property is within the Williamson Act.
Is that correct, Ross?
Yeah, about 50% of that 3,000 acres is in the Williamson Act.
Of the part that's in the yellow one here?
Of the expansion area, that is the area outside the blue line
okay.
to the green line. So. I believe that was your question, Commissioner.
Would that be grandfathered in under, once it comes in under, or
We can include that land within our sphere of influence, but we cannot annex it.
Until the contract expires.
Until the contract expires, or the city agrees to implement and control the Williamson Act. The other alternative is for the city to have their own policy that says we'll annex that, but it will remain in the Williamson Act until it expires. So those are the two alternatives. In either case, though, the land must remain in the Williamson Act until it either is canceled or expires. Does the city have procedures?
We do not. It's worked on its own. Based on the policies we already have in place that we have ordered with growth, it's usually on the owner developer that's initiating the cancellation as they're anticipating growth moving towards that. It's critical when it's adjacent to the existing urbanized area, but a lot of those areas, those 50% that's still designated, they're not going to want to cancel their contracts immediately, because the road may not be 10 years away, it may be quite a bit longer than that, and it's to their advantage to be in under 1% contract.
Correct.
We haven't had a need to administer a 1% contract up to this point.
I know that cities such as Sanger, Fowler, Parlier have adopted procedures whereby the city can control and implement the Williamson Act following annexation. But that just means that there's a little bit more work for city staff to work with those property owners and make sure their Williamson Act contracts remain in effect. And but it does allow you to annex that property. It stays in the Williamson Act. Any other questions? Tony?
Well, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about residential densities. This is usually a big discussion item amongst councils and commissions when it comes to their general plans, and I imagine it's going to be the same here. In page 2-14, you'll see exactly what's on the screen here. There's some policies I wanted to go over. One of the biggest changes in this document, in the land use element itself, are the density levels that we've shifted to. One of the goals that this committee established was we were going to become part of the San Joaquin Valley Blueprint and participate in that and try to incorporate a lot of what they've developed into our general plan update. So these densities levels reflect that desire to not only increase densities but to preserve ag land, and there's a few other policies about narrow streets and garages, and we won't get into all of those, but those are essentially found in your really specific plan, and they've been incorporated into this document. The density levels that we've moved from or to, for suburban residential, the existing density went from a 30,000 lot size to a density level of 1 to 4 dwelling units per gross acre, and there's a little difference between gross acre and net acres, and as a developer, the roads and all that are counted in your gross acres, and your net, they're not. So an actual suburban residential development would probably be a minimum lot size of 10,000 square feet once you've counted for the roads and any open space and setback issues. Low density went from an existing, in your existing document that's adopted today, it states that it would be a minimum 12,000 square foot lot size. So you can see we've already shifted the density. The document before you, the policy reads 4 to 8 dwelling units per gross acreage. So that equates to approximately 4,000 to 10,000 square foot lots in that level. Medium density, it currently reads 6, 7, or 9,000 square foot lot sizes. That's now proposed to be 8 to 15 dwelling units per gross acre, which would equate to a 3,000 square foot site area per unit, or these are duplexes, triplexes, maybe fourplexes, townhomes, that type of development. High density goes from 2,000 square foot per dwelling unit to a 15 to 30 dwelling units per gross acre, which equates to a minimum of 15,000 square or 1,500 site area per unit. Those are generally your multi-level stacked apartment type units, similar to maybe what Mr. Queering has built on the new apartments at the end caps there on the I Street, or the proposed senior housing at Sierra View Homes. Those are stacked multi-level units. That's the density that's at there. In addition to those density ranges shifting to a much higher level, there's also a policy in this document that proposes that residential development will meet the minimum density requirements within the land use designation. And I emphasize this policy in particular because this is a a major departure from where you are now. This means that a development could not build at a lower density than what is in your general plan. And I'm going to try to figure out how to explain that. If you had 5 acres and the density required you to be 4 DU per acre, that means 20, but a developer came in today could build just 10 units, and we would allow that. This says that you have to be at the minimum, you'd have to be 20 units. So I think that policy warrants some discussion amongst this committee. It's unfortunate we don't have the full committee, but I think that's a policy that you need to discuss and let us know as your staff whether or not this is something that you want to do or not want to do. It does, it will assist in providing more lots within your community. So you'll become a denser community, and that's the intent of it, is to encourage a denser community consistent with the San Joaquin Valley Blueprint that, I don't know if you recall, about a year ago, they adopted some smart growth policies, and one of them was a medium, the middle option was an average of 8 dwelling units per acre. So these policies get you there. That minimum density requirement is something I think we need to have a discussion about and decide whether or not we want to do that. But if you don't do it, you'll have people still wanting to build the large lots, and you won't end up achieving the density levels that you have and we've outlined in this document has been prepared to meet. And with that, I'd like to stop and see if you have any questions about the residential densities, because these are important policies in this document. Seeing none.
So this is item 2.7.5 that you're speaking of?
2.7.5, yes.
What are other cities in our county doing in relation to this type of issue?
I don't know of any that have gone this far. Yeah, we don't think anybody's gone this far yet. It's probably someplace where people are going to go. Otherwise, you're not going to meet those densities and increase the densities that the San Joaquin Valley Blueprint is going to encourage us to do. And we may have some state policies that end up saying that you have to do some of these. But this policy is new. It's not in your current adopted document. And it's not something that's been adopted elsewhere, which is why we wanted to bring it to your attention specifically.
Right. The final density of the blueprint came up with is something that I have a hard time agreeing with.
Right.
You know, the thing about it is when they're working on that blueprint, they're looking at the larger areas more than they are ours. You know, Reedley is Reedley, and we live here because of how it is. And yeah, we are spread out a little bit. And we do like to have our room. And we do like to have a 2 or 3 car garage.
Right.
You know, what they're trying to create is making everybody into the Los Angeles and the Oakland and the San Francisco, where you're going to stack houses on top of houses and people are going to be able to reach out and touch their neighbor. You know, that's fine and dandy for areas that have critical, you know, land limitations. You know, as Bruce said, we've done a very good job of filling up our residential areas boundaries that we built, and you know we're going to ask for quite a bit of land. Still, I don't think enough. I think our sphere of influence should go all the way to the area that's being, you know,
the study area.
Because later on, as this continues to go, we're going to have a harder and harder time expanding our sphere of influence. Can get tougher and tougher. You know, and if someone wants to build a home on a 10,000 square foot lot, they can afford it, they can afford to maintain it. They want to pay that water bill, now that we're on water meters, you know, to put landscape into it, then so be it. This is America. You know, let people spread out and do things that they feel comfortable in doing. But to be mandated that we have to stack each other on top of each other, I'm just not comfortable with that at all.
The one thing I'm a little concerned on this medium density, you're speaking up to 20 dwelling units per gross acre. What was the average lot size on that again, if you were to establish that?
It can be...
20, it would be pretty small.
It can get down to about 3,000 square feet. Of site area per unit, that's why, those are your fourplexes, your duplexes, triplexes, maybe townhomes where you have some shared driveways, so you don't have, you get more housing per acre because you have shared amenities.
Right, but it seems like that is rather dense. For your medium density, are we going to look at that as our average density?
Actually, the amount...
As opposed to the suburban or the low density, because the low density, even at 8 dwelling units per gross acre, you're talking about fairly small lot sizes.
The majority of your residential development, the yellow, I think it's on your maps, is the low density residential. It's in the medium, in the medium, there's a couple different shades of brown. So the yellow is the predominant land use, residential land use that's in your city limits or your planning area. So again, you have to accommodate all different types. So we've established most of it for low density residential, and then we've got pockets of the other two, which you're required to have. We have exactly the amount of medium and high density residential in that plan before you to meet the regional housing needs in our housing element, which isn't part of this discussion tonight because it's on a different track, but you have to show how you can accommodate those number of units. Now, you know, whether you ever actually meet those numbers is a whole other discussion for another night, but that document and the numbers you have before you, it does accommodate those units, and we would be able to meet those regional housing goals with the land use plan you see before you.
Even our low density allows down to 4,000 square foot lots. You know, one thing that, and I know this is all brought on by, you know, greenhouse gases, and we're going to clean up the environment, and we're going to make everything walkable, and we're going to make everything affordable. And, you know, it was kind of ironic when you sat in that room there at the convention center with everybody with those clickers, and you looked around that room, and it was more people in that 45 to 60 age bracket that probably already owns their home and probably already has a larger lot. They were clicking it down for everybody else in the future.
Well, I wasn't there, but I heard the same comments from other folks in other communities, that the people with their clickers were probably folks that had their home already.
And the thing about it is, when you looked around that room, there were a lot of people that are tied to development in that room, clicking those clickers. And what better sense for a developer than to be able to cram more houses on a piece of land to make more money? And to continue to squeeze down those streets. And, you know, they say, well, we're going to build this dwelling so two or three people are going to live here. You're going to have five or six people living there. You're going to have four or five cars tied to that smaller lot and that smaller house. And you're going to have everybody parking on the streets. And we already have streets in this town where you can't even have two cars pass by. So it just scares me that we keep professing that this is the regional blueprint and it's going to meet the greenhouse gas standards, but, you know, realistically we all know that development's driving this so they can make more money.
Well, and I wish we were all sitting around a round table so we could have this discussion, because it really warrants a lot of discussion. You're exactly right. Is this how Reedley wants to grow? And those are some of the questions we have for you when we bring this to you. Because if you tell us that this isn't what we want to do, we need to go back and amend these policies. These reflect trying to follow some of those things that, you know, we, AB 32 and SB 375 and the blueprint, all this is all kind of wrapped up into these policies. But if you tell us that this isn't what you want, we've got to go back and massage, I guess, for lack of a better word, some of these things and try to get to where you think Reedley wants to be. And that's the purpose of this meeting, is to get that feedback so we can...
We've already had developments in this town where, you know, we were at the 6,000 minimums lot. Then we allowed some to go down to 5,000. Now we've got one that's a mixed use, which is, you know, I'm very supportive of a development that's mixed use. I mean, that's all the way down to 4,500 square foot lots. So, you know, it's just getting smaller and smaller.
We probably need to figure out how to engage the public a little more on some of this. Because, I mean, if it's implemented right, higher density is probably the real deal unless we want to pave over all of our ag land, which last I heard, most of us like to eat a little bit. Yeah, unless we want to be eating out tubes, we still need ag land. And one way to preserve it is to keep the cities a little more compact.
It's kind of, our plans is very conservative compared to, you know, many of the plans that you see out there being worked on right now. And, you know, that's good. I mean, Reedney has always been that conservative community, which we need to stay that way. We don't need to be doing more than we can actually do. You know, some of these folks are wanting to expand their spheres so great that if Selma had their way, they'd be coming to Lackjack, you know, with the mentality that they have on their council right now. And you know, Parlier is a good friend, but we always have to make sure we keep an eye on our friend so they won't come past me that.
Well, Bruce made a good statement. Reedley has done really well with both your infill, and I think you have a higher density on average than some of the other communities that we're surrounded by. So I think you have done a better job. It's whether the decision is whether you want to take that next step and actually put it into policies. So, and if the answer is no, we have to go back and work the numbers and make sure that plan that is before you will accommodate the actual units that you that we think might be needed.
I just don't know that we want to get as radical as the quote unquote blueprint committee has recommended. You know, a lot of them were talking at 10 to 1 acre. It's getting off small.
Yeah, I think the average was 8 units an acre, and that's hard to get in a single family resident. I don't think I guess you could, but getting 6 units an acre, you're doing good. As a developer, if you can get 6, you're doing good.
I'm going to date myself, but you know, my favorite movie of all time is a movie called It's a Wonderful Life, an old Jimmy Stewart movie. And you can either decide whether you want to live in Pottersville, which was the subdivision in the town that was so crammed and so close that it became the slums. You know, or you can have that American dream that, you know, Jimmy Stewart's character built for people. That single family home with a yard big enough for the kids to play.
We have a lot of empty land just east of Jefferson School. And if I see 20 units per acre going in there, I just see that neighborhood becoming even more depressed and gang infested than it is now. That's a depressing thought for me to see. It would be not only every time I would walk out my front door, I would see these apartments, and they would be a half a mile away from me, but I would still see them. And I'm not against apartments. We have a lot of apartments in our area, and the owners of those apartments have done a tremendous job in keeping them up, and they look nice, and they've become part of the neighborhood. But 15 units per acre is just, especially with the social problems we're having now. I don't know if we're just looking at square footage here or social circumstances are being taken into consideration, gangs. I don't see much of a community area on the east side of town. We have the new sports park, which I go by there every day, and it seems to be being utilized more and more. But in that one block there around Jefferson School, if you see, there's just apartment after apartment, high density, high density, high density. It just bothers me. We need a discussion on that.
Well, we're having one, I think. And just to address some of the points that you raised, which I didn't get to, the high density and medium density designations that are on that map, when we try to put them in, you know, kind of play the colored pens and figure out where they go and how many acres a site would be, we tried to spread them out across the community so we didn't have that concentration like you have in some areas of the city of Greeley right now. So we did try to make sure that we put some of that acreage in all four quadrants if you divided it into four. So you wouldn't have that situation again, but of course you're gonna, you know, you should spread it out and you will have some places. So I need some feedback from you guys on what you want to do. I'm getting a sense that the 2.7.5 maybe is not something that you want to keep in this document, which is the meeting a minimum density. So if you could build two units and you only want to build one, we would require you to build two on the lot. Currently, you could do one. So that's making you meet the minimum density levels.
I understand that, but I'm questioning then, let's give, for example, we have the low density residential, which is most of the yellow,
mm-hmm.
the bright yellow.
Yes.
And if I had, I wanted to build there, I would have to change the zoning,
no.
in order to do less?
Yes, that's what it would mean. If you wanted to do more of an estate, larger lot development, yes, you'd have
okay.
to, this would, having that policy would require that you change the zoning and the general plan designation to do less development.
And currently, if I had something at the low density and I wanted to change it, I could just ask to change it?
Well, currently you don't have a minute. You have a lot size requirement. You don't, and your zoning ordinance says you can just do one house per parcel. So if you had a 5-acre lot, you could build one house on it. Even if you parceled it off, you could parcel it into 5 1-acre parcels under your current zoning ordinance and general plan and build 5 homes. What this says is you can't do that. If you're going to subdivide, you're going to meet the minimum densities. You'd still be able to build your one home, but if you're going to subdivide, you're going to meet these minimum density requirements in the general plan. So, like I said, it's a major departure from where you are today. Another example would be is if you it requires 10,000 square foot lots and you wanted to build 12,000 square foot lots, this policy would restrict you from doing that if you were below that density threshold or above it. Currently,
so
you could do that.
The other way.
Yeah. Yeah.
It would catch you both ways then.
Right. Yeah, it works both ways. If you want to build more, just like if you want to build more than what you were allowed to, you have to change the general plan and the zoning to do that. It's the same as the other way.
And then if we do this, do we get an even worse reputation from the developers that we're so restricted that we can't come work in?
Well, it could. I mean, I think builders are trying to go to smaller lots. I think they're somewhat being mandated to do so, but they get a lot of feedback. What was it, maybe 6 months ago in either Fresno or Clovis, you know, next to some existing 7,000-8,000 square foot lots, the developer wanted to build 4,500 square foot lots, and the community came out up in arms because, well, how can you do that? So that's the other thing is you'll have to deal with. That's how far you're going to go if you do these levels. So.
Yeah, we already have that down for the river bottom, potential.
Correct, yes.
Subdivision down there. We're upset over the town home lots.
The other side of the coin is the plan we currently have. In some cases, you have mixed development plans. but the developer rushes in, they build the low density, and then the places that are zoned for higher densities sit there vacant and they're never built. And then down the road, then those are rezoned, put more, less density there, so you kind of lose the whole goal that you were trying to accomplish. So you're going to be a little careful there by taking all the restrictions off, because, I mean, we've seen that pattern work over the last 10, 15, 20 years.
And that's been very common, in the, like you said, in the last 10 years or so. Most communities aren't allowing you to do that. If a city, and I think it might even be mandated by the state, if somebody came in and wanted to remove or change from high density to low density on 5 acres, we would have to find another 5 acres someplace else, because you still have to meet those regional housing needs. And if you start chipping away at your higher densities, you're not going to be able to do it. So we're mandated to keep enough acreage to start meeting, or at least attempt to try to meet those.
That's exactly what I was thinking on the legislation that's in place already, that the state or the feds hold us over our heads. And anytime that you change your policies, of course, you know, when you go for funding, it's gonna affect because of the density requirements and so forth. You know, personally, I would like more information. You know, the population in Reedley, you know, I'd like to hear more I'd like to have more public discussion about the housing needs here in our community. I mean, I have an idea, but I would like to hear what people have to say. You know, how many first-time home buyers do we have here in town? What's our population look like now? How many foreclosures do we have in the city? You know, all these questions that I have about, you know, what it is the population we're serving now, as opposed to, you know, what is the medium income? All these things that are going to affect, you know, who's going to be buying houses in this community. You know, especially that legislation. I mean, if we're required to do something to set aside properties, I mean, there's very little we can do about that.
Mm-hmm.
We have to follow the law.
Well, one adjustment, if we shifted the medium and the high density levels to a lower density, which means we're going to have to add more acres of that in order to meet those numbers. We're meeting it right now with what you have in front of you. So if you said we want to not be as dense as we've got in this medium and high policy that's before you today, we're going to have to go back and add acres to that plan of medium and high. So there, those are the adjustments. Maybe one thing for our next meeting would be maybe something similar to what I showed you Visalia did, was kind of a summary of what do these densities really mean, and give you an example of what 1,500 site area per unit is, what is 30 units an acre. You know, what's some in real life, and we'll try to find them in Reedley. We might have to go outside of Reedley to give you some examples. And let you spend some time. We'll get it to you before the next meeting so you can come back in with a real physical example in front of you, tell us whether it was okay or not. I think there's some good examples in Fresno. I think there's some good examples in Visalia, and I think there's some good in Dinuba. But I think you have some here. That we can use to give you samples, and maybe that will help you mentally just get to a number, and then we can decide on some of these ranges at the next meeting.
Or, you know, this map is predicated on what we do with A, B, C, and B here.
It is.
Very much so. And I think that's where we need to do the work, is in A, B, C, and D. And I really think that we need to take a good hard look at that 2.7.5, about eliminating that. You know, when we talk about the mandates from the state, of course, you know, they're mandating us with, we have to have, you know, X amount of units of low-income, affordable housing. You know, we can work toward, you know, meeting those types of goals. But, you know, everybody has to keep in mind that, you know, affordable housing doesn't always mean apartments. We need to start giving some of these, going out and trying to recruit some of these developers, I know Visalia has done it, so has Merced, did a little bit of it, Modesto has done a good job of recruiting developers that come in and build single-family affordable housing that are helping them to meet their numbers. And I think that's what we need to look at too, is it can't always all be about apartments. One of the American dreams is to own a home, regardless of, I grew up, my dad's house with six of us kids in a 1,300 square foot home, and we lived just fine.
Well, I'll tell you, this is not a surprise to me, and I don't think it's a surprise to us as staff, because this is a significant issue, as Councilman Rapata said. Deciding these policies ends up affecting what you have on your map in front of you and what's eventually adopted. So it doesn't surprise me you want to spend more time on that. It doesn't surprise me you're concerned with some of these things, and we were just trying to get it before you so we could have this discussion and move forward on this the general plan with you.
I think Steve had a good idea on perhaps recruiting builders, because we have some examples in town of affordable housing. It was built several years ago, and some of those houses actually were built better than adjoining subdivisions that had a lot higher price tag. I mean, most of us know a couple of them that we're talking about. We think you mentioned any names.
Was it the Guanera development south of town on some of those self-help houses?
Yeah, but they sold 44 of their last lots to self-help, and those were built. What's funny is if you go up to the San Jose area, there's a few communities like Cupertino's one, Morgan Hill's another, where they have built into their plans where if someone's coming in and say they're going to build a 50-unit subdivision, then every third house has to be an affordable house, right? Has to have the same cosmetic look as all the other houses around it, but it doesn't have all the amenities on the interior. And it has to be designated to be sold to a low to moderate income family. And when you drive in those neighborhoods, you don't see the difference between the low income house and the higher income houses, which, I've always thought about that. Why couldn't we start to incorporate some of that? And when you look at it, I think it's Morgan Hill that makes it one affordable for every four that's built. Now that's how they're building their numbers to meet the state guidelines.
We could look at that. They're called inclusionary housing ordinances or policies, and we could look at it and bring you some samples of what other communities are doing. It hasn't been real popular here in the Valley to have the inclusionary housing, either the requirements to build, like you're saying, for every four you build one, or the fees. Some adopt a fee for inclusionary housing, and then they use that money to go out and get builders to build affordable housing. But then again, it's segregated, or it's a separate development. So we can just look into a couple of those and maybe bring you some samples if it's something you want to explore at the next meeting.
It's kind of ironic because I can tie it to a story about sports, because in this one neighborhood there in Morgan Hill, this family moved in into one of those affordable housing homes, and they would have never imagined living in that type of neighborhood. And at first, there were some issues because some of the neighbors weren't real happy with them being in their neighborhood. But then it was kind of ironic because the one son was a great basketball player. And all of a sudden, he was helping their high school to win a championship. And all of a sudden, the family was welcomed with open arms because their son was helping them win a basketball championship. And that's kind of sad.
It is.
That they have to, it took the son being a great basketball player to be included and accepted. But in other parts of that community where it's like that, and people are just people, and they're letting people, bygones be bygones, and grow together. And maybe that's the thing is, too, when we talk about gangs and we talk about all these, and I know Mrs. Bencourt always wants to intertwine, the circles, and there's nothing wrong with that. That might be a way to do it.
Well, the Blossom Trail development that you saw that had the mix, they have, like I think somebody mentioned it, 4,500 square foot lots, I think they even have townhouses on 3,000 square feet, and then they have some larger lots, so you're going to see now, they weren't designated for affordable, but the smaller lot, it's going to be a smaller house, it's going to be less money than the 10,000 or 12,000 square foot lot, so you would have had those mixed in. But we can certainly look at some policies that maybe might help you get there. You know, we'll try to get you some anyway.
Well, yeah, I think, you know, a lot of that's going to drive how this map is anyway, so you may as well try and get that right.
Okay. So for our next meeting, I'll try to bring you some samples of, you know, whether they're in Reedley or surrounding areas, and we'll try to get that to you before the next workshop so you can maybe spend some time in the afternoon looking at those of what different density levels look like. We'll take another look at 2.7.5 next time as well, maybe come to a final decision, and then potentially some information on who it is that we're trying to serve. I think some of that's in the housing element that we're currently updating and probably fairly easy to get to you. And then maybe some sample inclusionary housing type of policies for you to take a look at. Does that kind of wrap that up? Wanted to spend just a few minutes on commercial. Essentially, most of the commercial policies remain the same. We still want to maintain the viability of your downtown area and make sure it stays as the center of your community. You have a great downtown. We want to make sure we preserve that. So that's a carryover from your previous general plan. And do further efforts. I think we've done a lot to emphasize the downtown, but linking it to Manning, we've got the rail corridor area that wasn't part of the previous general plan. So that's there now. We want to continue to enhance that travel way. Well, a new policy is big box retail uses, and one, just mentioning them in your document because it doesn't mention big box users, but restricting those users to the community commercial designations, and those would be reflected in the red areas on the map that you have in front of you. If you want me to flip that over on the screen, I can do so. But so you can have your larger retail type developments and centers would be allowed to go in the community commercial. In other words, they'd be providing services to the entire community as opposed to neighborhood areas that are should be designed to provide services to the neighborhoods, your local dry cleaner and, you know, the sandwich shop, and then your larger commercial is providing to the larger area of Reedley and, you know, hopefully from outside the area to bring folks into Reedley to shop.
So that's basically Long and Manning.
Long Manning on both sides. So we have some of the community commercial on the east side of Manning there. And then we have some on the west side where I think it was already planned for some level of high, you know, bigger commercial there along Manning on the west side. So we've added some acreage and just wanted to raise that policy that it would allow for the larger retail users. One policy we wanted to specifically to mention because it's come up in the past. City of Reedley currently only has a standard for full-size parking spaces, 10 by 20. So if you come into Reedley, you have every parking space you're required to build has to be 10 by 20. We've had a request in the recent past for allowances of a certain percentage to be compact spaces. We've put a policy in here and wanted to raise it with you, whether or not it's something you want us to keep, that would establish or allow us to then, when we update the zoning ordinance, to establish a standard for compact spaces, which would, one, you know, you have a smaller parking lot conceptually, and you also be limiting, you know, you don't need as much land for compact spaces as you do for full size. We're thinking about 20% could be compact, but wanted to put it out there, see what your thoughts are on that, and if it's not something you're interested in doing, it would be something you would move from this document in the future when we brought it back to you.
As long as we don't get as small as Big Sally, you know. I smile only because, you know, I take care of the facilities for a private junior college, and, you know, I do what my bosses tell me. Our parking spaces are so small on our campus that every single day on that Visalia campus, you've got somebody hitting somebody else's car every day. And Visalia has gotten way too small of the allowance they allow in the parking space.
Well, I do know it's small because I live in Visalia as well. And I'll make a note that we don't go down to the level that they are. But I think there's a way to accommodate some smaller. We have a lot of small cars these days. And I will say, if you drive through a parking lot in Reedley and you have a large expanse of blacktop or asphalt, it might may cut down a little bit on that in future developments if we can. And the other thing is that we would require that it be spread throughout the center, and not, you couldn't do a whole row of compact spaces and maybe put them on the ends of a row and try to spread them out. But if you're okay with us leaving that in, I'll leave it in for the future.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, I don't think it's a bad idea. It's just a matter of it's not making way too small.
Okay. Good deal.
Yeah, I was going to say, it just depends on what you call the small size of a compact. Because I have a car that's classified as a compact, but I don't especially appreciate people opening their doors and dinging the paint.
I'm going to say Visalia is 7.5 by 18, which is pretty small.
You know, I drive a four-door Chevy pickup, and I can't park in our parking space.
That's what I was thinking about. We have a lot of pickups around here.
Yeah. Well, and that's why I say spread it out. You can't, you know, when we get to updating the zoning ordinance, there would be specific development standards that would say you can only have 5 in a row, and they have to be spread out, so you don't end up with... What happens when you have a large number of them together, people start taking up two spaces or, you know, you get too close. So we want to make sure we limit it to a few spread out, and we would accommodate maybe saving some ag land, less money, and maybe smaller parking lots in the end.
Actually, okay. I had a student come ask me if we had to deal with all the body shops.
Those are the major policy changes in the document. Before David comes back up here, I would just say there are other policies that have changed in the document. Some of them are small changes. A lot of them are straight from your really specific plan, so you've seen them. If you've looked at that before, you've seen them. We pulled them over, changed them where we knew we had problems, and or eliminated them. I think there is narrow streets are mentioned in here, and I don't know if that's a discussion you want to have here. We will discuss that in the circulation element, which is your next workshop that was planned for that. So,
you know, we talked about how do we engage the public and how do we get more people to show up to this. One thing I thought about was, you know, maybe we put an ad in the exponent, you know, and ask questions in that ad. Do you want to see 4,000 square foot single family home lots? Do you want to see, you know, narrower streets in your community? You know, you start to ask those questions and let people read that. You may get a reaction and get them to show up and engage in this discussion.
I'll tell you, they will show up if you do that.
And one of the other things I think that would help would be to try to put that in, and that can go most anywhere, but have something right on the front page. We might have to use a little coercion on the local paper.
Are they here?
Gerald, right on the front page, have a little, you know, the time of the meeting, the location, and then you can link that to back further in the paper. But in a lot of cases, unless it's not on the front page or the back page, nobody pays any attention. They don't see it. They don't search every page looking for these things.
Well, having done this elsewhere, if it does end up in the paper that this is, you know, you're looking at going down to 3,000 or 3,500 square foot lot, you're going to get the folks here if they know that this is going to be discussed next time, because they are going to be concerned. This is conservative, aggressive, whatever name you want to put to it. It is trying to meet those mandates by the state, but it is a departure from where we are. We are a rural community, but I think a lot of folks do want that yard with the backyard and the front yard room to play. So, with that, I'm done with my presentation, unless you have any additional questions, either on commercial or residential. Thank you.
mean, the rest of the time is really available for taking questions from the committee and questions from the audience. I just wanted to say a few things real quick about the density issue that Darlene brought up. We're well aware that's really the core issues of how much are we going to grow, where are we going to grow, and how is that growth going to occur, what's the density going to be. And then looking at that big area, mostly yellow, where we have this broad range of 4 to 8 units an acre. From our perspective, if it all builds out at 4 units an acre, well, then we're not going to have enough land. But if it all goes to 8 units an acre, well, then we don't need all that land. So we're looking for policies of how do we make that work. And it's easy enough to throw out a rigid policy that says, well, there's just going to be a minimum, and here's how it's going to be. Or it's easy, we can look at inclusionary housing that occurs in other parts of the state. But just so we're aware, those two issues, inclusionary housing and minimum densities, we're not experiencing those in Fresno County right now. So what we've thrown out to you are new for this area. They're new for Reedley. With our Reedley specific plan, we went out and did some things that some other communities hadn't done yet. We got a little more dense. We narrowed the streets down a little bit. We got the lot sizes down a little bit more. And kind of are ahead of the curve on approaching what does it take to build a community that's attractive and healthy, but also work towards meeting those goals of increasing the density and preserving agriculture. Clearly, it's not that simple. It's not that easy to just throw those rigid rules in there and we're done. We'll go back and we'll look for what can work, and we're looking to you to tell us what do you think is flexible enough to make this work. With that, the time is available for you to invite questions from the audience, and staff will be available to answer those.
Would there be anybody in the audience that would like to ask questions of our staff this evening?
Or comment on what they wrote?
Our next meeting is going to be February 28th at 6:30 again. If you want to meet here, we can continue with that. We can move it to the council chambers. We can put out as much information as possible and move it to the, what's the name of that room next door, Joel? The big one, the California room. If you want us to scare the community and get them all to come out, we can fill that one up.
I don't know if it's scaring the community other than it's telling them what's happening, you know, and that's what we need to do. We need to be very open to this community and let them know. Unfortunately, we have that conservative, laid-back community who only reacts sometimes after it happens, you know. And as you speak to people throughout the community and you say, well, you know, do you know that this is going on?
No.
Well, take a look at that. Tell me what you think.
We think that, back to that yellow area, we think that density can work. It's just, but the policies are going to dictate whether or not it works well, or it's invited to the development community and comfortable for the residents. We'll do what we can to advertise the next meeting to encourage more people to come out. We're always available for the public. Hopefully there's a little bit of interest from the paper, and we can use our phone advertising system and let them know that we're out there. We could put it in the water bill if we have enough time, but we'll do what we can to encourage some more participation and come back on the 28th, along with the other material that we need to start introducing to you. We'll specifically come back with some more discussion on the density issue.
One thing you may want to investigate is put something to scale, like the lot size that we can do now to scale what we're proposing all the way down to the, what is it, 3,500 square foot lot. And one could be like 6 inches, and the next one 4 inches, the next one 3 inches or whatever. And width of roads, this is more or less the current width of a road, and this is the width that we're looking at. You know, we're not setting stone or anything. But some kind of something that they can compare it to. Yeah.
Some exhibits that show what those densities are.
Right. And the other side of that is, you know, there's enough sites, you know, where you can go on and grab off of these developer sites the footprint of houses, right? So even go grab some of those footprints and set them onto that 3,500 square foot lot, show what kind of house could actually be built on that thing.
We'll do some of that.
Is this on our website?
We can get all the material up on the website. If it's not, some of it should be up there. If everything's not, we'll make sure we get it up there.
I think it would be beneficial because the members of the community can download this, you know, at their leisure and look at it.
I know that they can listen to the whole thing if they'd like, probably by the end of the day tomorrow.
A stamp draft, really, really big, put it out there.
One of the things, looking at these, some of these maps in the 8.5 by 11, they're too small to really be of much use. I know at one time in the planning commission, we had asked for, I think it was 11 by 17 on most all maps, and that doesn't seem to be happening anymore.
The maps are definitely available on the website. And our intent, once we get the final document adopted, is we think it's going to be a more useful document viewed over the internet. One of our discussions today is to have those available on disk. They'll be cheaper to purchase and much more readable. We'll still continue to make hard copies, but it seems like we're transitioning to people feeling more comfortable looking at things either on their computer or online.
Having that on CD would be great.
What's up?
You know, you can get those from the county. Actually, the county will provide a lot of those to you free of charge.
Not anymore.
Yes.
No.
Yes, they do.
$3 or $3.50.
I don't pay for discs from the county. I get them free.
The final paper copy was intended to have 11 by 7. Those aren't too small, but it just...
I understand that.
Putting them in here, it's a...
But if we have them on the website at a larger scale, that helps a lot too, because you can...
And when it's on CD, it'll actually be on the 11 by 17 as well, so it's easier just scroll through the pages.
But to get the public here, that advertising we're talking about is not a scare tactic. It's actually what's in this document, so.
We'll do that. And that's all I have. Rocky, city manager, would like to say.
Council and commissioners, thanks again for coming and working with us, and we want to thank those from the public that came out. But I want to let you know that we'll also utilize our newsletter the next time that it goes out, and we can put a whole list or litany of questions in there regarding the general plan, because it goes to every individual in the city. So we'll make that effort to do that. One of the things we don't want to do is, as we start moving down the road here, and there is going to be a point that if we get three months down the road, there's going to be a point that you don't want to come all the way back to what we started here in January and try to change all that. So we want to try to be ask as many questions and get everything as settled in our minds as we can, and then continue to move forward so that we can have a final document and have a good document for the public and for the councils in the future to work with, as well as commission. Thank you again.
Thank you.